Now we have time for some feedback from this meditation, from this style, quite complex approach and practice. And so, how was it? Are there questions? Like, especially if you're interested in this approach and you would like to develop, then anything that would support that, I would be happy to bring it now. And if there's any sense of, I'm not sure about something or questions, then it would be very helpful to ask it now. And so what I want to say is that this is a time for feedback or question. And after, we'll have a time for a kind of a closing circle. So this is not the closing circle now. It's just about this meditation and your feedbacks and questions.
Yes, I have just one word to say.
Yes, Elia.
Yes, because it was very difficult for me. Yeah. And I think you can help me, because when you, I think I have to do it again and again, but when you say the breath is not yours, suddenly I feel like I was closed in a body that was not mine, you know, and the thought has kept me, and I didn't succeed to let it go. So I stayed in this and I
was it unpleasant?
Yes, a little uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yeah, okay. Well, one thing that is interesting is just like we bring in an idea, because it's just an idea, yeah? We bring in an idea that this thought, this breath is not mine, and suddenly you have an experience of feeling that this body is not yours, which is, I think, it gives us some clue about how ideas and concepts create the way we feel reality. This is... Mm-hmm. Already one experiment that we can learn a lot from, yeah. And as you say, you'll have to practice. This is really not an easy access style, really not. Like if sometime I say meditation is like learning to drive a car, you have to watch the road at the same time as the gears and the pedals and everything. Then this is like driving an helicopter. It's more complex than some other styles of meditation, but it has also more promise of fruits in them somehow.
Yes, interesting.
Yeah. And so, definitely, as you said, and I think we have to remember the words of the Buddha. He was saying, Dukbahia, practice in this way, see things as if. Yeah, which is what we're doing. So, yeah, it will have, and this feeling that you had now may not be there the next time, or maybe yes, but it will never stay. If you practice regularly, this will go. This will happen maybe again or not, I don't know, but it will change into something else.
Thank you.
Thank you, Celia.
Hi.
Hi, Noemi.
There's a lot going on, so I'm going to try to make it clear and short. So I started practicing the three views through the book, Seeing That Freeze, that you recommended last year. So I've been, I guess, since last spring, practicing the three views. And I think this one is the one that works best for me. It has become a tool that I can use a little bit in the same way as Metta. So it feels very dynamic. I can sort of maybe sometimes call that practice if I need to. And for the first time today, in the meditation, I had this really weird insight that, I mean, I guess everything's always weird in meditation, but for the first time, I really felt like the three views, they're exactly the same. So it was just like, it's really hard to describe how and why, and it doesn't feel conceptual. It was just kind of tuning into a space, and then actually in that space, those three views, they're not combining. They're just exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that was nice. Yep. And then I have a question. There's only one resistance with anatta, which is that obviously we can also apply it to the intention. The intention, it's not my intention. It's an intention that arises.
Yep.
And so the question sometimes is a bit sort of, well, who's in charge here? And it also was interesting doing the guided meditation with you, because sometimes it kind of felt like your intention became our intention. And so it was like an intention that was arising in the group.
Yeah.
And it's very poetic. But then sometimes I do wonder, if intention arises, then I don't have any responsibility to make an intention arise. And so it doesn't mean that it's limiting my practice, but I don't understand how to.
So that contradiction you'll find in many topics. You will always have the ultimate teachings, which are non-self, timeless, like oneness, or all these things. And on the other hand, the relative teachings, and they contradict all the time, everywhere. So you've pointed out the contradiction with intention, for instance. Yeah, because we'll say, in one hand, we'll say we need to develop and have a clear intention, and the next minute we say intentions are arriving by themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a contradiction into that. And so I think one of the beauty of Buddhism is that it doesn't push one reality and just take care of the other, or which is happening in some tradition more, I find. Still, it's not an easy task. We have the same, like non-self and compassion, for instance. Yeah, why having compassion for people if there's no people? So these teachings are not easy to articulate one with the other. But I think there's a lot to say, and this will definitely, the relation between cultivating the non-self and the emergence of compassion, for instance, will become clear with some point, and also responsibility, and as you said, and so. But I have found, for now, like a stepping stone, a realization that helps me a lot, and so that's what I'm sharing, is we can see we don't have to have just one single coherent explanation for reality. So, for instance, that's what's happening in physics. In physics now, it's a mess. Physics was very tidy until the beginning of the 20th century, but since the arrival of the exploration of the very small bits that we call quanta, with small matter, then there was a division in the quantum, from the quantum to the general, because it's not the same rule. What the rule that applies in the small doesn't work with the big picture. Yeah. So physics has now two sets of rules. If you observe a small thing, and if you observe a big thing, it doesn't match, which was not like this before. So Niels Bohr, one physician, that was Nobel Prize in 1922, Danish, I think he is, I'm not sure. Well, anyway, he came with this realization that he said, let me remember, the opposite of a true statement is a false statement, but the opposite of a deep truth can be another deep truth. So that's mind puzzling, you know. So it means, like, you can have one truth that contradicts something that is also true. And both art like needs to be respected and taken care of. And in the Dharma, I'm in this space where I see contradiction, two kinds of truth. Not yet have I the understanding of how they really match together, and I'm not ready to push one for the other. You know, so it means I can practice some time and dedicate time to see intention not being my intention and not arriving from me, and at the same time practicing clarity of intention because I realize that without this clarity of intention and deepening the quality of my intention, there would be no progress or no fruits in the Dharma. So I can take care of both reality without feeling bad about it. And maybe one day I'll find a theory that joins both. That's what they're looking into physics now. The guy who will come with the theory that joins these both, the quantum and the physics of the big elements, he will have the Nobel Prize. Yeah, so you will have the Nobel Prize in the Dharma if you find the explanation that links the ultimate teachings with the relative teachings, because they always contradict one the other. Don't get messed up with that. Just respect both and practice both. That's what I'm doing. Yeah, thank you, Noemi. Gabriel?
Yes, that's a good moment for me to speak, because I have, I spent several years in Advaita about 30 years ago, so...
Can you speak a bit louder, or there's something with your mic, maybe?
Hang on, I'll get my info.
Yeah, okay.
Forgot. Yeah, yes. Yes. I spent several years in Advaita about 30 years ago, so it is quite familiar. And I'm quite impressed with the ease how you hold the different views, and how, like, because you can so easily get into clashes of paradigms and truths, and so this is really special to me. And yeah, and I like this, let a sound just be, or let a thought just be. And I sat down kind of comfortably. And then you said, like, let's dedicate this meditation to the people who are suffering. And I was going, my God, now I have to generate an intention. And that was being so active versus more being receptive. And that was... Yeah. It's very interesting, and it's very touching to me when you say, like, the opposite of a deep truth might be another deep truth rather than. So, yes, I'm very grateful for this experience today, and a bit more of a specific question would be, like, when there is a space, or even like you speak of awareness, and sometimes it even seems to me like as if I'm perceiving awareness, which in a way is may or may not be so, yeah, because it's more, as I understand it, awareness perceiving, seeing me. And even space, of course, it's a different quality, but in a way it's still an experience. And yes. I can kind of drive myself crazy by trying to get rid of experience, or it's a lot nicer when I can just accept it as the experience of space happening.
So that's quite subtle, and I would just like be relaxed with it, and just induce a little understanding of not really wanting to get rid of any experience, but more. Generating a feeling that this experience is happening to nobody. not trying to get rid of the experience itself, but of the relation with the experience that I like by default is induced in the feeling of I am perceiving awareness, or I want to be get rid of space, is like the I is still very much there. And so just like, okay, there is space, there is awareness, and in the feeling, trying to lower the importance of the sense of I am feeling the space or I am feeling the awareness, kind of. And that's part of the practice. Mm-hmm. That's in the advices. I read two things, the story of Bahia and the instructions to the monk going to the forest and sitting, and in both, it's saying the same thing. Yeah. That's the instruction. It's just like reducing the sense of the self being the subject. No subject. Yeah. No center. Yeah, so, but that, very gently, I would say, just almost like a game. Like, you have the idea, you conduce an experiment of how would it be if I induce the feeling that there is no center to this experience, that there is no subject to this experience. This experience is there, but it's not happening to me. Yeah, and I have no, then you don't care if it's going away or staying, that's a different, you see what I mean?
Yes.
Just, it's a very small and fine tuning of your understanding, I would say, which sounds like easy to say that you've spent a lot of time in Advaita. It sounds like you've been exploring enough to distinguish with a fine eye. yeah, this is difficult in English, this I. So you tuned already quite finely your gaze into the depth and to these finest non-moving states. So it's just like a fine tuning. In this place, it's small movement. It's not like concentration of the breath can be strong effort. Here, it's not about strong effort. It's small effort that will make difference. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
It's just a small tuning of the intention here. Not getting rid of the experience, not looking for a different kind of experience, just experimenting with the possibility that this is happening to nobody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel. And always, like, being curious of what it does when that view is established. Do we feel more free, more open? Insights are coming, some new understanding, some new depth. Then this view needs to be developed, practiced, and we can pick it. Or even outside of meditation, we should be able to pick that view up from time to time when it's useful.
Mm.
It's not a view to stay in. Also, that's something I want to make clear for everybody. It's not like we want to live from that state or that way of viewing. Of course not. We need to know that depth, but it's not for staying there. In that style of experience, we go back to life and work and this and that. Our awareness goes out. The experience is very different. But because we know that state, we will have a different relation to the happening of the world somehow. But it's not for staying in this deep non-self state.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an advice on how to live one's life from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anybody who feels like for his or her practice, there would be a question that needs to be addressed, or just go for it if there is. Yeah, wouldn't want you to feel stuck because you didn't ask the question you wanted to ask.
Excuse me, will you send us the registration of the, yes?
The recordings, yes.
Yes, the recording.
Yeah, you will see the recordings and some of the text as well. Good. Yeah, you will receive a letter with the record, the link to the recordings, and some letter.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so let's take a 2 minutes pee break, and then we get back for the closing circle. And if there's the closing circle is not about question, but if there is another question, then that will still be a time for asking it.
I'm sorry, I've got to leave, and because family obligations. Yeah. I want to thank all of you. Thank you for the teaching, and thank you for all people for the what we share today. Okay. Thank you very much, and goodbye. Good evening.
Thank you. Bye bye. Au revoir, Céline.
Au revoir.